This is a Beyond Caster Brews podcast. Available on iTunes, Audio Boom, Stitcher.com, Player FM, and BeyondCasterBrews.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is the podcast with a K from BeyondCasterBrews.com, but you already know that because you've listened to our shiny new intros. I'm Christian Corley, and with me are James McLean and Brian Terranova. Chaps, are we all right?
Well, yeah. In between now and that last podcast we did, God, what was that, a month ago? I've still lost my voice. So, I'm okay otherwise, but damn, it's amazing how long it can last.
Yeah, you maybe should see a specialist about that.
I should. I hope this helps prove that we actually have, quote, passage of time between our podcasts.
Well, I can tell you one thing, that this podcast that we're recording now is guaranteed to go out before the podcast that we've just recorded. That's completely screwed up your timeline, hasn't it?
No, I'm a time traveler. It's even better now. That's hilarious. Okay, go on.
Okay, so, anyway, just on the matter of podcasts, incidentally, I've recently recorded a new coaxial with Brian Terran. No, I haven't. I've recorded a new coaxial with Gareth Cavanna.
Cool.
Just a few days ago, in which we talk about Coronation Street. Of all things.
Oh, God, really?
Yeah.
There's two things you'd never get me on a podcast to talk about. One of them is Coronation Street, and the other is Boomtown. It's the one thing that I can tell you now, I can guarantee that I will never, ever talk about on a podcast.
You'll never talk about Doctor Who.
I'll never talk about it.
I have episode 11 Boomtown on a podcast.
Absolutely. You'll never get me talking about it. You'll never hear me talking about the issues of the teleport section with the sonic screwdriver or the relationships between Davis and Rose. That's not going to happen ever. I can tell you that now as a time traveler.
Christian, we're just going to have to scrap that idea then, I guess. I really thought Boomtown commentary would work too.
I don't know. Maybe I can work on my impression of James McLean.
Maybe. That would work.
Maybe do my David Mitchell a little bit deeper, then I'd maybe get to James McLean.
How rude.
Podcast with a K. We're going to be chatting about a little idea that James had earlier. But did you know, dear listener, that there is an autobiography from Peter Davison coming along? He's been a busy guy, because how does he got time to write an autobiography? He's like the only person in Doctor Who who's left Doctor Who, seems to be constantly working. And yet, there is an autobiography coming along in, I think it's a few weeks' time now. I haven't looked forward to a Doctor Who autobiography this much, Liz Sladen's aside, for obvious reasons, since Tom Baker's. Now, Is There Life Outside the Box? An Actor Despairs is due out on October the 6th, so that's this week. So if you haven't already put your pre-orders in, I would suggest doing that now to find out all about the life of Peter Malcolm Gordon Moffat, which is, of course, Peter Davison's real name. Now, while publicising his upcoming autobiography, he's been sharing his thoughts on the modern television. The difference today, he says, is that there are so many more hours to fill. They have to make dramas very cheaply and very quickly. It inevitably shows. For the viewer, it's much harder to find something to watch. Sometimes when I look through the 150-odd channels available on my television, I still can't find anything. And if we consider that there's a channel called Yesterday that pretty much shows all creatures great and small on a loop, you can see that he really means what he's saying here. And it is a problem. Now, over in America, how many channels have you got on average in America, Brian?
Oh, God, network or cable?
Yeah, well, it depends on what setup you've got, but what would be the average?
I don't know. Cable is ridiculous. It's up in the hundreds. Uh-huh. Network TV, you've got, what, 6, 7, maybe?
But that depends on where you are in the country, though, doesn't it?
Yeah. I mean, like, those would be the main ones. The main, there's probably like six main ones and then a couple public channel ones,
right,
and
yeah.
other local ones. But yeah, I would say six main ones at least.
No. Yeah.
Go on.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, now we're getting into sort of coaxial territory here, but well, pretty much when they introduced the idea of satellite television in the UK, which came along pretty much before cable television in most cases, it was sold as that we'd have this great vast selection of choice. But there's nothing in that statement, is there, about quality? It's all about quantity. And you do find, you know, my mum refused to get satellite television. In fact, she still doesn't have satellite television. They have cable. But, you know, they would not get satellite television. They would not get cable television until the late 90s, mid to late 90s. Because she didn't feel that there was going to be enough quality on the other channels to justify the extra, what pretty much amounts to extra time watching TV. Have you got any thoughts on this, James?
No, I had a distracting text message, so I've not been listening.
Fair enough.
I kind of thought, do I try and blag this or do I just say no? just let you guys know. Sorry, like the listener, wasn't listening.
So, dear listener, if you would like to put your name forward as a replacement for James McLean on the podcast with the No, but if you
Bond's
do.
Boomtown next week, so you can do that one.
If you've any thoughts about what I've just said, I mean, is there anything on TV these days, or are we now, which is why I was bringing in James, are we now really in the age of, and I think we are for a lot of people, but this isn't a universal thing. This isn't like nationwide in the UK, in Europe, USA, Australia, but it is heading that way. People just watching what they want because they've subscribed to it through Netflix or Amazon or whatever, and just forgetting about television because the networks aren't putting on anything that people actually really want to watch.
Well, it's a difficult one. If you put it like that, now I'm listening. I think there's two issues. I think, first of all, I still think there is a massive over-exaggeration of the VOD and, to a certain degree, satellite market. I mean, yeah, it is bigger now, far bigger than it was, but I think a lot of people do still have the habitual. They just watch what's on television. They'll check and they'll watch, you know, people look at this sort of, you know, the catalog approach, and it's still not quite at that point. It might be different in the States, but certainly in the UK, I don't think. I mean, we obviously see it with Doctor Who, with Moffat constantly trying to use that as an excuse for the lower ratings. That it's clearly because no one's watching linear television anymore. They're not watching schedule. They are watching on their iPlayer. Then you see Barb's figures and you go, no, they're not. They're watching television still. So there was a bit of that.
Yeah.
But I think you're right as well at the same time. And I was talking to a producer in London on this couple of weeks ago. And, you know, sort of trying to put this to him was, you know, is this an issue at the moment? Is the industry really accepting that there's going to be a massive change in how you provide television? And how is the industry adapting to that? Because it will be done by category. It'll be done by, as you say, audience consumer selection, and it won't be done through schedule anymore. So that's going to make a massive change, surely, to how you develop shows, how you commission, what you commission, how you monitor, how you market, how it's consumed, you know, who has the power. Because we said, you know, one point, you know, 20, 30 years ago, is that famous line, you only had to be marginally better than the crap that was on the other channel, because that was your basis of competition. People would watch what was on, and as long as you were a little better than what was on the channel next to you or your rival channel, that's all you needed to do. You didn't have to do quality. You just had to do a little more quality than the other person was doing.
Yeah.
And that shifts. So yeah, I think it is an interesting situation, and how the market, and to be honest, the producer had some very interesting ideas on that, but which I really can't go into, but now I think about it. But the point being is that it is something which the industry is having to consider at the moment. And I reckon personally that they're being a bit slow on it. I think it's because I think advertisement's being slow on it. I think the industry, any system, isn't it? Any system, any infrastructure, by its very definition, abhors change. Because it's a structure, it is created, it has got foundations.
Yeah.
It doesn't want to have to remake new foundations, so it will resist. as the music market did with Napster, didn't it? You saw that mass, and still is, resisting. So yeah, I think it's going to be interesting where it goes, because they're just totally being floored each time by these new renovations. And I think advertising industry hasn't worked clocked it yet either. So I think advertising side, which as we know is a big part of the scheduled television industry, you know, the DVD side is very interesting, and some of the movements Netflix is now making and some of its stipulations for how long it holds term on a program before it can go to DVD and things, that's becoming very interesting as well. So the whole market is shifting. What that means for Doctor Who, I really don't care.
Okay. Well, yeah. Well, we'll find out as time progresses, as we always do with these things. Now, you know, we've been doing some commentaries. You know this. You must have listened to one of our commentaries, and if you haven't, you know, wind back through Audio Boom or iTunes or BeyondCastOrbis.com and find those commentaries. We've done quite a few now, and modern and classic Doctor Who. And quite often we find that we're chatting about how our feelings have changed about these particular stories or serials. And James, you've been talking about this via email to us, and like this idea of changing ratings.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm sure Christian can put it in the show notes so people can see what we're talking about. But I found this rather amusing sheet the other day, and it was just a folded up sheet, and it was a photocopy of the listings of the classic series of Doctor Who up to Survival. And I had on it, in that way that you do when you're like 12, or certainly what you do before you've met a girl, and you actually sort of put ratings next to each one that you've seen, so you can sort of see this very, very basic statistic of what you've watched. Or I think I've got on here what I've read as well as a target novelization that are marked with R. I'm not sure. I've got a G in a circle, and I'm not sure what that means yet. I've been sitting trying to work that out next week through the Boomtown podcast, and I've not quite, I won't have quite yet worked out what that is all about. But yeah, the bottom line is what was interested me on this list that I did, and I put percentages next to each one that I'd seen, what I thought of it, which is what I presume the percentages are, because I don't remember how I rated them. And I was just interested in what ones have significantly low. I mean, like I've said, me and Brian, we did the Delta and the Bannerman commentary a couple of months ago, and I really loved that. And yet that's got 30% on this out of 100. So obviously when I was about, I imagine I must have been about 13 or whatever, I really did not like Delta and the Bannerman when it came out. And yet now it's one of my favorite episodes. So I was kind of interested in where we go, you know, are there stories that we once disliked and we now like, or vice versa, you know, from when we originally saw them. Again, Day of the Daleks, 60%. And I actually remember being very disappointed with that. Now I'd probably rate that mildly higher. So yeah, I mean, are there any stories that you think that you perhaps really liked as a kid and you don't now, or vice versa, or ones that it's going to be a very short podcast.
Yeah, I'm with you now. Yeah, you're probably right. It probably is. I don't know. I find that there is some that I really love regardless, like Earthshock. I can put that on in pretty much any mood and know I'm going to enjoy it.
I hadn't seen that at this point. Well, I'd seen it when it aired, but I obviously hadn't seen it as a sort of teen at that point.
Right. What rating did you give it?
That's what I mean. It's not on there, but I remember seeing it as a kid.
Right.
So at the kid, what was it, 1982?
Yeah, 1981. Yeah.
1981, 1982. So I'd have been about 7. So I don't really remember that. But this would have been written when I was probably about 13 or so. So it's obviously ones I had managed. Because a bit of a background, I had a teacher at school who had tapes of all these Doctor Whos. He had all of them, certainly since Legopolis, all the VHS. And so he'd lend them to us so we could see them, and he had loads of the older ones as well. And of course, by this point, the VHS market was starting to open up too. So I think this list was done at that point in time where I had access to seeing these with fresh eyes, and the ones that were airing, like, for instance, the seasons 24, 25, and 26. So I think while I'd seen Earthshock, it's not on the list as one I'd seen because I'd not seen it recently. Arc of Infinity had come out on video, I think, 76%. Delta and the Bannermen's the only one that really surprises me. I think I lost them. I suppose Death to Daleks, I'm surprised that I put that at 65%, but I always, that was one of the first VHSs that I saw of it because it was one of the first ones to come out on budget. And I really liked that, so I'm surprised I rated that so low. But by and large, actually, to be fair, a lot of these haven't changed that much, apart from Delta and the Bannermen. And I dealt Time in the Rani, I rated at 55%, which I think I'd rate as marginally less now. They are fairly close to what I would have, what I would think they were.
I'm fascinated that you had the time to do this.
So am I. especially since I don't remember doing it, which kind of makes it terrible, really. That I had this and I don't actually remember doing it. Do you know what I mean? That's a really weird thing. I must have spent a lot of time on this and yet I have no memory of doing it. I'm assuming it's me. Someone borrowed it from someone else. Someone just as boring. But I mean, yeah, it's a short conversation. If you can't think of any that have either appealed more as you've got older or ones that you did.
Actually, there is one that stands out for me, and that is Remembrance of the Daleks.
Okay, this could be interesting. So which way round is it with that?
When I first watched it, I didn't like it.
Oh, really?
When it first went out, I didn't like it. I thought it was too cartoony.
Okay.
Wow, really?
Yeah. So, like, you know, there was the gag in the TV detection van going through the tunnel and the Doctor and Ace swap places. You've got the actual sort of cartoony visual effects on the baseball bat and on the rebuild of the Spiridon gadget to upset the Daleks' directional navigation sensors or whatever it is it does. And the editing and the music was all a bit too. The music was a bit too arch for some reason. I felt so. I was really unhappy with Remembrance of the Daleks. And nowadays, I think it's absolutely fantastic.
So those things no longer bothered you?
No, not at all. Which is a strange. I don't know why. I don't know. When Remembrance came out, was that the first episode that series?
Yeah, it was. So
it was quite different from the previous series.
From Dragonfire, yes, yeah. Very much so.
So I think possibly I was feeling a bit jarred by that.
So you remember preferring Dragonfire to Remembrance, because Dragonfire is very cartoony in a lot of ways.
Yeah, I know. But there's just something about Remembrance that I didn't like. And so I ended up preferring Silver Nemesis as an anniversary serial
I still think, especially if you're young, Silver Nemesis has a lot of fun in episodes 1 and 3. It's episode 2 which is really bad. Mm. And yeah, there's bits of episode 3 which aren't very good either. But episode 1, it's got quite a nice build-up of ideas done in a very unusual format way for Doctor Who, with all these little segments all sort of mashing together to make this final moment where it all cohesively comes together in, you know, with the Cybermen landing and the neo-Nazi lot and the Doctor and Painful all in the same spot. But then, as you say, episode 2 just goes off the rails, doesn't it? Just bumbles around into embarrassing territories, and it still does that in 3 to a bit, but you do have some nice moments. You have that lovely play with the Cybermen and the Doctor and Ace in the tower, and then obviously there's the nice piece when they at the end with the battle. And the code is really good, but then you do have those awful, painful bits still, like her in the car. So yeah, I still think I can see why you might actually prefer Silver Nemesis, because it's got pace, it's got a lot of colour in there, it's very vibrant.
It is. Who is Dolores Gray, Brian?
I have no idea. I, you know, honestly, for a long time, I thought she was just a British actress putting on an accent.
Because she was bigged up at the time by JNT, wasn't she? As being like a great piece of casting, having an American movie star in Doctor Who.
Yeah, it's, and just having a look, I think the other one that rose in my estimations and went down is the War Games. I've got that here as 75%. And I think for a long time I rated it as one of my most favourite episodes. Then I got it on DVD as my age now, and I was less impressed with it for some reason. Right. I think it dragged more than I remembered watching it on video. So that sort of went up, and then I'd have probably dropped it down to about 80. So from 75 to being one of my favourite ever, 90, 95, and then dropped down again on a rewatch. But yeah, a lot of them still remain the same. Daleks, Invasion of Earth, An Earthly Child. I've only got 65%, and now I'd rate that far higher. I think that's possibly one again that has changed.
Have you got any, Ryan?
Okay. See, now I was distracted because I was looking up Dolores Gray. It's have okay. I got any what now?
I was. You got a text message?
Have you? Yeah, no. Yes. 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 That's what happened exactly. This podcast is going so well. Have what's I got about, what, Christian?
What's about An Earthly Child? I mean, because for me, An Earthly Child, when I watched it, I've got it here as 65%.
I always hated it as a kid.
That's what I mean. But then as I grew up, the bits in the cave and everything, I've enjoyed a hell of a lot more.
Do you remember when they showed when they showed the non-broadcast version in?
Yes.
Was it in 1993?
Yes.
Or
yes.
Was it a bit after when they closed the studio?
Yeah, I think so.
That.
Yeah.
Yeah. I thought that was a lot better, to be honest with you. I quite enjoyed that, but I never really appreciated it until the last 5 or 10 years.
Yeah, absolutely. And then I think perhaps from a writing point of view, when I rewatched enjoyed dialogue a little more than when I was a kid, the dialogue of the cavemen I actually found quite interesting, and their motivations and how they weren't, while they sort of obviously look like the standard ug cavemen, they have actually quite a well thought out storyline, which makes them intelligent with a sort of a natural intelligence while still being ignorant. And I really liked that. And I thought how they played that and
I think that's very important because there is this, I'm going to start going off on one if I'm not careful here, but there is this attitude among, quote, popular science and popular archaeology and popular history that humans in the past were basically, presumably they were just sitting around all day when they weren't hunting because they did nothing. But that's not the case at all. You know, human civilization goes back at least 10,000 years. And probably, you know, if stuff hadn't been destroyed, it would probably go back a lot further than that. There's this, you know, we've got to the stage that we're at now through conversation. And that our methods of speech and communication, certainly in the English language, have barely changed in the last 1,000 years. So if we look at that, we consider that, if we then extrapolate that backwards, then the whole idea of conversation, the exchange of ideas, then the idea that early man was just an idiot is ridiculous. Because there's
I was just going to say, when you see with primates, you see a lot of behavior which we consider human within primate cultures of, you know, adulteries, lusts for power, alphas, betas, jealousies, all those sort of basic things are there, and they are there in Tribe of Gum without obviously there's the dialogue there and there's ideas of new concepts having to deal with, because the whole point is that they are at the pinnacle of a change, an age change,
this tribe has hit a cul-de-sac, hasn't it? It's gone off on its own and it doesn't know what it can't really proceed from there. And also what you just said about their primus and a Doctor Who link here to the most recent episode of Would I Lie to You had Brian Blessed in, who's looking a lot better now because he was supposed to be in the Viking episode in Series 9, wasn't he?
Right,
But he fell ill. But he was in there and he was telling a story which was the most ridiculous tall story about him going on one of his expeditions and being captained on a kayak by an orangutan. And it was absolutely true. And this orangutan was paddling the kayak.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there you go.
I think they managed to make that balance work very well. That they gave them some sort of cohesion of of a community, of a pack or of a tribe, which is obviously by the name of a tribe, without making them overtly colourful in their dialogue and without making them boringly dumb, there was a nice... those power hierarchies were there, and I imagine they would be there, and then seeing how the protagonists deal with that and fight it. And the beautiful thing about it, which is when you watch as an adult, is that, again, you have this idea that is very rarely used, is the fact that if these four people who are far more advanced in this tribe, and they have no way, really, they have no way of actually dealing with it. There's no way to particularly dialogue with them. There's no particular way to fight them. There's no technology. There's no... They may be sort of thousands of years in the future, but they have no real power over this tribe at all. Mm. And that's the kind of wonderful tension there, isn't it? It's that the four of them, even the Doctor, who comes from a far-off civilization, they're running away most of the time. And the only really intelligent thing they ever do is with the skulls. And that's about it. And the rest of the time, they are totally at the mercy of their environment. And I think that is really cool. So yeah, as I've got older, I've watched that episode and thought, yeah, this is actually as interesting as the very first episode, the pilot episode, and the first episode, the setup. And I never noticed that as a kid. As a kid, I loathed the caveman story. Now, it's as good to me as the Dalek story, or any of those where they're in those sort of situations.
Yeah. So So Brian, have you got any that you've changed your opinion on?
Oh man, I wish it could be an unearthly child, because I love part one, but it's not that I dislike the rest of it. I actually do like the rest of it, but it's slow for me, and I don't mind. Like we always talk about how with classic stories the slower pace is nice, you get to know the world kind of thing, but for some reason that one's really slow to me. But I do like it.
Aztecs isn't any faster, is it, really, if you think about it? I mean, it has the added drama factor of Barbara's role, but beyond that, there's a lot of similarities in the way that they're sort of written.
I'm not as keen on the Aztecs either, to be honest. But yes, I do agree.
Well, really, because I put it 79%, and then I changed it to 85%. So obviously, I accelerated to fifth gear on that one.
Are we strictly talking classics here?
No.
Changed opinions. Okay, because I yesterday watched Planet of the Dead, and I quite enjoyed it a lot.
Is this the David Tennant one?
Yeah. Whereas before, I remembered thinking they came all the way to Dubai for this story, and this is what we got, you know. And then watching it again, I was like, no, you know what? This is quite enjoyable. As for classic episodes, I've definitely had a few over the years. I mean, James and I, just doing a podcast or two, we found what was it, Delta and the Bannerman, we liked more when we watched it, or did we previously like that one? Yeah. So there's definitely been some that, you know, either our tastes change as we get older, or we can appreciate things that we maybe missed before the first go. Because I've done that even with movies before the first time around. Either I was distracted, or I just wasn't in the mood for it, or whatnot. And then second time, something snapped and a switch was flipped, and I enjoy it. There's a handful, because I would say maybe Peter Davison's era probably has the most for me, because I don't know what it was with his era. When I first watched his episodes, I didn't like that the companions weren't getting along, and I think that put me off of a lot of stories. And then going back and rewatching some later on, I really enjoyed them more, because I enjoyed the story at hand, and the bickering was just a small part of it. I can't call one out offhand, but I just remember watching his era. I was always put off a little bit by the fact that nobody got along, which was a deliberate choice. They did that on purpose. They wanted to show drama. They wanted to show that people weren't there, but that to me just went against what I enjoyed about the show. You know, like everybody, I mean, I suppose in the first Doctor's era, and probably even the second Doctor's era, you had the fact that whoever came on board the TARDIS was kind of stuck. And that drama, that can create the drama, and that probably should have created more conflict than Peter Davison's era, where he could technically go drop them off anywhere he wanted, even though he tried with Tegan and failed. But by that point, he was doing things with the TARDIS that his first and second incarnation couldn't do. And it just, I don't know, it seemed more jarring. So, yeah, I don't know. I guess those sorts of things put me off of a few stories.
I wonder if there's any modern series episodes. Oh, well, do you know, actually, I was going to mention Day of the Daleks, because when I was younger, I didn't actually like Day of the Daleks that much.
Oh, wow.
And now I think it's fantastic.
Yeah, I really like that one myself. Although, you have to remember, a lot of the classic Doctor Who stories for me, I saw when I was older. The ones that I saw when I was younger, like James there with his list, I don't remember seeing them. I know I saw them. I know I saw the show. I remember the Doctor and K-9 and Daleks and so on, but I don't remember story specifics because I was too young to remember that. So I would have caught most of them again probably when I was 18. So a lot of the episodes for me, yes, it's younger in comparison to now, but I didn't have that child mindset to put on them versus, I guess, a more adult mindset. So it's a different. I wish I remembered more of when I was a kid.
So what about new series then? What about new series episodes that you've desperately changed or different, completely changed your opinion on?
That's a good question. Well, obviously, like I just said, Planet of the Dead.
Yeah.
Watching Love and Monsters again with you guys, I have a better appreciation for it. It's like what we were saying with a couple other series one episodes. There's just too many silly moments that seem out of place to me, seem wrong for the story. The characters seem wrong for the story. But watching it again, it was like one of the first times I watched it where I was like, hey, you know what? I might check this story out from time to time again. Whereas after it originally aired, I was like, yeah, never watching that again.
Yeah, I was like that as well. I wonder if there's a thing about... Because when I watch Doctor Who, when it comes out, you know, for the first time, watching it as live, or for the first time, there has to be utter silence so I can hear every piece of dialogue. It's not just Doctor Who, it's the same with anything I'm watching for the first time.
Yeah.
And I do wonder if there is something in the whole communal watching that I've previously not appreciated. Because although we're doing it virtually, we are communally watching Doctor Who, aren't we, when we do the commentaries?
Yeah. Mm. You know, it's... When I was watching The X-Files, when that show aired originally, it was great. I could just sit down, I could watch an episode, and like you, Christian, I would lock out the outside world, I would listen to every piece of dialogue, I would enjoy the heck out of the show. And then as things got into season seven, I'm so used to British terms now, I had friends over, and originally it was just like two friends, and we would watch the show, and then when it was over we would discuss the show, maybe make the odd small comment here or there. But then as things progressed, I had more and more friends come over, and pretty soon it was almost like you were having a party where the X-Files was on in the background. And yeah. I found that for much of season eight I missed it. Mm-hmm. So I didn't really appreciate it, and I skipped a lot of season nine, so I had to catch up with both of them later on. And I remembered being pretty rude about season eight, because I thought I had seen it, because I watched most of it when people were there, you know, but I didn't really watch most of it. I paid attention to them, or it was hard to pay attention to. And picking up season eight again, there's a lot of magic in that season. There's a lot of good episodes, good storyline and so on. And it will be the same way for Doctor Who with me. So after that, I pretty much, whenever I watch Doctor Who now, I do block out the outside world. But for a few occasions, I think I watched the 50th with a group of people, but we were all very dedicated to watching it. And it was a great experience because, like our commentaries, we had some fun and interesting conversations during the episodes where we may have missed some tiny bits here or there. But for the most part, we were respectful that we were all trying to watch and understand this thing, but we could have some conversations. But I really enjoy the commentary aspect that we do, because it's episodes we've already seen, so we can be more relaxed. And there's always something that comes up that one of you two will say that makes me think about something in a completely different way than I had previously seen it. Sometimes it makes me sit there and go, oh, damn, I wish they hadn't said that, because now I can't like this thing, or now it's making me doubt this thing. But a lot of times it makes me feel better or have a better understanding of something that happened in the episode. And so it's great doing the commentaries, and I hope the listeners are enjoying it for that fact as well, that maybe you just missed something that had happened during an episode, a subtlety, a background aspect, or a thought that linked two scenes together that makes them make more sense for you. But yeah, I think that's helped a lot with some of these commentaries. Even if it was an episode I loved, maybe something came up that I was like, wow, I love this episode even more because you guys just said that thing that made all hell of sense, you know? So yeah, it's a great thing. Maybe not a first watch thing. I don't know if I would like to do this with you guys like when Series 10 airs, but you know, it would be fun though. We should try it, possibly.
Maybe. So I'll tell you what, we'll put a sock in it now, dear listener, and give you the opportunity to tell us of any serials or stories or episodes that have vastly altered, either far better now to how you were when you first saw it many, many years ago, or if you've decided, actually, it was a pile of doodah, and you never want to see it again. So let us know via Twitter. We are Castor Beyond, or on Facebook. We're still facebook.com/podcasterbus, and probably will be for some time to come. If you're on visiting the website at www.beyondcasterbus.com, then do leave your thoughts there. And if you're listening and you've enjoyed any part of this or any other of our podcasts, if you have the time, please leave us a review on iTunes, because that would help us immeasurably. We'll be back next week with a Dot 2 commentary, unless something like massive happens in the world of Dot 2. And watch out for the new Coaxial podcast with myself and Gareth Cavanagh. Until next time, it's goodbye from us.